of green, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, your host today on Global Radio Talk Show, a broadcast service of Global Business News. Our special guest today is Patricia Corey, a best-selling author, a screenwriter, and a public speaker. She's been called a real-life Indiana Jones by fans and readers around the world. She's an inspiring icon of truth and a living model of the adventurous spirit. Patricia Corey is one of the most well-known and established authorities on the realms of the mystic, views of the world, and multidimensional reality that challenges the status quo. She's been a key voice in the alternative media scene for decades, and she has brought paradigm-busting information to the public since 1996. She's also the former host of a popular radio show, Beyond the Matrix. In 2012, she founded the global nonprofit association Save Earth's Oceans, dedicated to restoring the balance of our fragile ocean ecosystems, saving the whales and dolphins from whaling, slaughter, and exploitation. Let's welcome Patricia Corey. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me on your show.
I live in San Diego, and I got to tell you that I'm a big fan of clean water and clean oceans. And believe me, right outside, less than a mile from this studio, is an ocean that's not very clean. So what are you doing with your foundation, Save Earth's Oceans, Inc., and what good works are you doing through this organization, and how are you impacting the world through this? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear you say that about the oceans in San Diego. I'm just back in California after 12 years, and I'm pretty shocked at the condition. I'm in San Francisco, and seeing what I see from here, just from here, I notice a significant degradation of the quality of the ocean. But at any rate, that shouldn't surprise us because these last 10 years haven't been good for the ecological balance on our Earth. I'm sure you'll agree.
Yep.
Save Earth's Oceans is a new organization which I founded in 2012 in July. So we've just gotten through the grappling with the legalities of having a nonprofit. And our first year has been organizing a fundraising event, which we just did in London. It was called Singing the Oceans Alive. And the idea was not only to raise funds for the organization, but to raise consciousness about the quality of life in the oceans, of our marine life, particularly the whales and dolphins. And the concept was to play music for them, and let the world understand that these mammals have a bigger function, perhaps, than we even understand. So part of the primary work that we're doing with this organization is to follow and support researchers that are trying to break through and communicate through language with the cetaceans, for starters.
Wow. Now, I want to get back to this. You're also an author of a new book called The Emissary, and just released through North Atlantic Books, Random House, in March 2014. And I understand you have already written a screenplay, and that has been optioned. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, the exciting thing about this is that I wrote the screenplay first, and to my amazement, it got optioned before I even finished the novel. So I think I'm the only author, writer that I know of at least, who gets the screenplay first and then adapts it to a novel instead of the other way around.
Way to go. Way to go. Is this a mystery story, an adventure? And
yeah,
what's with the real-life Indiana Jones? You know, tell us about this swashbuckling idea.
Okay, well, I got I got penned with this name because I travel all over the world. I can be seen hanging off a cliff in Peru or climbing through the tunnels under the pyramid. I really do have quite an adventurous life, and this has been documented by so many people who have either come with me on sacred tours and journeys or even in some of my previous work, a previous book called Where Pharaohs Dwell, for example, that talks about all of those adventures in Egypt. With regard instead to the story of the emissary, this is a, it is, it's hard to define the category. Most people are describing it as an action-packed suspense thriller that is about, it's a story about three devastating events that take place on the planet simultaneously. The first is 600 birds drop out of the sky simultaneously in Los Angeles, and in the same moment, on the other side of the United States, in Maine, a woman walks out of her house and finds tens of thousands of fish dying and dead on the beach. And then we jump to New Zealand, where at a resort, a cozy resort in New Zealand, which is now summer there, 150 whales and dolphins have beached and are dying or dead on this popular resort beach there. And one of the protagonists of the story's name is Jamie Hastings. She's there on vacation. She's a renowned psychic researcher from the Bay Area. And she's on vacation to get away from the weight of all the work that she does with police investigations. She does a lot of corporate type of psychic investigation. So she's run away from it to get, let's say, get distance from that kind of work. And doesn't she find herself right there catapulted into the drama of these dying whales and dolphins? This
wow.
takes her on a very long adventure out into the ocean, where she starts having communications with whales and dolphins, and there from there the story becomes quite complicated because of the message that they are giving her about what's happening to the planet.
So we have climate change. Some people call it global warming, but definitely climate change. And now we have something mysterious happening. So I don't want you to give it all away, but I'm really intrigued. Patricia, tell us what the next thing is, okay? And how does the moniker of the real-life Indiana Jones come to you?
I live a life that is probably not what would be considered normal. I'm in search of adventure and things that give meaning to my experience. And I find these things, of course, in daily life. I'm not suggesting that I have to run around the world to find it, but I'm particularly intrigued in ancient civilizations. I'm very concerned and intrigued about the changes that are happening on the planet with regard to the environment and culturally. And at this moment in my life, I am absolutely, I would even say to the point of obsessed with trying to make a difference to save the oceans, because I see between the disasters in the Gulf and the Fukushima radiation and the die-off that we're seeing in certain species, I think it's very important that the human race start to pay a lot more attention to, considering that 80% of our planet is water. I think we're still very detached from the reality of what's going on in our oceans. And I might add, not to mention the sonar testing that's going on between the Navy and oil companies. The ocean is being blasted with high-pitched sonar testing, and that is devastating to the life in the oceans.
Okay, so this goes back to your foundation, Save Earth's Oceans, Inc., and this is a nonprofit, 501(c).
Yes.
Okay, and what does it hope to do besides create awareness?
We're as much as possible, I want to do what I can to help reduce and even stop sonar testing in the oceans, and that's a huge, huge issue, and it's going to take a lot of people being concerned enough about it to voice their outcry so that we can get this stopped. We want to clean up the beaches, so we're going, at this point, at this early stage of my organization, I'm rallying teams in some of the more dangerous, more devastated areas, California, Mexico, Florida. There are so many places that we need people out on the beaches collecting rubbish, for starters. And I'm very concerned about plastic in the oceans, because you may be aware of it or not, but there are now 5 plastic islands in the oceans of our planet. One of these, they're called gyros, and this is where strong currents sort of come together in almost a spiraling way, and all of the plastic refuge gets amassed into these gyros. So We have one, for example, that is bigger than the state of Texas. This is an island of plastic in the middle of the ocean, and it's oozing, breaking down chemicals. The fish are eating them. The birds are nipping at this plastic, and they're finding fish, dolphins, whales, full of plastic. So this is an urgent crisis on the planet, and this is something that I'm taking on as much as possible with the organization.
So if I can ask you a question about the plastic island size of Texas, is it moving around or is it just stuck somewhere in the water?
I wish I could tell you the exact coordinates of where this is, but yes, it's sort of just sitting in this, in the Pacific Ocean. It is stuck in a sense because it's in a current gyro where different currents from different directions sort of congeal in the ocean, and therefore it keeps pushing everything together. And it sits there, and it's so huge now. It's like they call it a continent, a plastic continent, if you can imagine such a horrible thing.
This is just shattering. Wow. It sounds disgusting.
Yeah. It's horrible. And the thing is that it's not just solid, these plastic particles and bottles and garbage, human garbage, are also melting. What I've been told is that it's not just a solid mass, but that it's a gooey sort of vertically also, it seeps down into a sort of a soup of plastic toxicity. So we need to do something about this because it was one, then there are two, now there are five of these plastic islands floating around in our oceans. And one of the problems of getting to them is that they're in very dangerous waters because of these high, high currents. So there are some researchers working on ways to break these islands up, and moreover, we've got to stop putting the plastic into the oceans. It's a long-term process. There is urgency to do something about it, and I'm dedicated to helping find the ways. And there's a young man now who has come up with a device. He calls it the Scooper, which is something like a glider plane, which he can take out on the ocean. It has these huge, long arms, and it scoops up debris and plastic. But he's having a lot of trouble getting funding. And money, of course, is vital to any kinds of projects of this manner. So we're working. We're working away. We're new, and we expect to do as much as we can on these particular aspects. And plastic, for me, is probably the most important.
Here in San Diego, there's a group called the Surf Rider Foundation, which is not doing the same thing, but they're certainly about, you know, clean ocean because of surfers.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I invite you to look into that Surf Rider, all one word. And
Thank you.
Yeah, you may want to do something with that. Who knows? But,
yes,
okay,
and that's another point. Thank you for pointing me in that direction, because the truth is that it's time for all of these organizations to unite forces. We need to be a huge voice. And there are many people doing different things, and I'm hoping that we can find ways to join together and have a more powerful position for the planet.
Yeah, okay. So tell me something about your background. You can go back in time to 80s, 90s. What did you do back then in your life that inspired you to write books to begin with? Because you've been the author of many books, right?
Yeah, this is my 13th.
What was your first book about? Going way back for a second.
Well, it was called The Cosmos of Soul, and it was a book about our role in the galaxy, our role as perhaps not the only civilization in the entire galactic scheme of things. And as we now are facing this discussion, we're seeing NASA divulging the probabilities of life elsewhere.
Mm.
More and more people, I think 80% of the people on this planet believe there is life elsewhere. And so this book was not ahead of its time, but it was certainly one of the forebreaking books on that question. What is the role of humanity as far as being a galactic civilization, and what do we have ahead of us in the time that this disclosure will happen? And I'm very interested in that. I'm very interested in the time that we're in, which we all agree is outrageous technological advancement, Sometimes I think it's getting so far ahead of us we can't even keep up anymore. And I think it's catapulting us into being galactic citizens. I mean, let's face it, NASA's talking about, already talking about inhabiting Mars, right?
Right, doing mining on androids, all kinds of things.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. I read an article recently that NASA wanted to pull an asteroid into our orbit so that they could take water from it and bring it to the Earth. I mean, this is a new galactic era, and my books are definitely galactic. But The Emissary is my first novel, and it's kind of galactic, too, because it also addresses the possibility of alien life on our planet already, and that's kind of giving the way they book, which we said we wouldn't do, but it's an important theme in the story.
I need to ask you a question. Is there still time to save the ocean?
Absolutely. That's kind of one of the questions actually on the book cover, is there still time? And we hear a lot of people talking about critical mass as far as the awakening consciousness of the human race, and a lot of people are still completely drugged by their TVs, internet, and all of the distractions. But on the other hand, a lot of people are seriously becoming very awake, very concerned about the condition of our planet. And it's a very exciting time. I personally think that it's when the human race is pushed up against the wall that we move into action. And I think that time is now.
Okay, so now I'm Googling you, and I see that all kinds of interesting stuff here on your site. So the Syrian Revelation, spelled S-I-R-I-A-N.
Okay, these were my first three books, and they talk about multidimensional reality, and I'm sure you're comfortable with that term, yes?
I don't know. I have hallucinatory dreams sometimes. But
well, in fact,
I'm not sure
what
how
is a dream?
I don't really know, but I've got to tell you that I did have this dream last night about driving up this big mountain. I don't know why, but I was driving up this big mountain, and it was so steep that the car began to lose power, and there it was going backwards, and I was about to fall off, and then I woke up. So I don't know what that means.
Well, I'd love to interpret that for you, because from a, let's say, from an alternative reality interpretation, I would say that, that would represent, or that would be very symbolic of when we leave our body, because when we sleep, we believe that we go into some altered reality or even some parallel universe. Something's going on that we can't define. And the psychologists say, oh, it's just your brain triggering neurons. But why do they trigger these strange abstractions? And I would think that that would be very symbolic of your spirit trying to leave your body to go into dream states or to journey or whatever, and then for some reason you get popped back down into your body. Because so many people have that experience of either careening down a mountain or falling off a cliff, and then they wake up. And it's as if they've just popped back into their body. So for people that are listening, the people that are enjoy or are intrigued by the idea of astral journeying, that's what you've just described.
Wow, God, I'll tell you, it was pretty scary. So now I'm looking at your site here, and boy, it's beautiful artwork here on SaveEarthsOceans.org. And I see that one of your books, and probably more than one, has been translated into different languages. Is that correct?
Yes, I have 13 books now, and many of them have been translated into a total of 22 languages, I think I'm up to. Even mainland China has translated a couple of my books, which is so exciting because they're not exactly conformist information. So it's delightful to know that I'm able to reach out and touch those other civilizations, other cultures.
Yeah. Hey, right? What's in your DNA to get you to think about all this stuff? You know, I mean, this is really fascinating. You know, I mean, here we are on the radio, but, you know, how did you come up with all this stuff? And like, for instance, accelerating human awareness as we prepare for ascension of our sun, our earth, and ourselves, light bearers from the ascended Sirian star. And, oh, this is really cool. So how did you come up with this?
Well, as a child, I was, most children are very conscious, very psychic, and that word seems to bother a lot of people, but it's awareness. We have a lot more than the senses that we deal with. And as children, we seem to be more in touch with it, and then it gets beaten out of us by education and parents who say, now, you don't really see that. But I had a mother that said, go ahead and see what you see. And as a youngster, I was already having a lot of visions about reality beyond what I was being taught as a young child. And at the age of 12, I was interested in UFOs, and I was trying to get my hands on Project Blue Book, which was an early expose on the possibility of ETs in our society. And I just have all these passions. I'm passionate about animal communications, about everything that's sort of out of the box. And that's, in fact, my radio show was called Beyond the Matrix for people who think outside the box. And I've pursued that all of my life. So everything that is esoteric in a way intrigues me. And one of those, the big issues is animal communications, as I said, because many, many people feel that they are actually being able to break through that language barrier and talk to animals. And I think I'm one. And I think anybody that has a dog or a cat probably doesn't realize it, but they too are able to make that bridge. And I love the earth. I love all the things that grow and live here. And I am also curious about the beyond. So it's a life experience of things that intrigue me.
Interesting stuff. Okay, I'm looking at your site here. April 1, Dateline, April 1, 2014. The headline is Ecologists Won an Unprecedented Victory, and So Did the Whales, when the International Court of Justice ruled, that's the United Nations highest court, they ruled against Japanese whalers and their relentless killing of whales. So is this just in the waters of Antarctica, or does this ruling impact other fisheries?
Thank you for bringing that up. This ruling was specific to the Japanese fleets that go out under the guise of research, and they have these vessels with big red research letters on them, but which are actually not for research, because you don't have to kill 500 whales a year for research. So they've been stopped. That has been stopped. They will find other ways to go about it because they eat whales, and it's a big product in Japan. But for now, that has been stopped, and that means for a moment the whales in Antarctica have a break. But the unrelenting killing of whales still goes on today on this planet, and I don't understand why, because surely I can't believe we can't get past the idea that whales are good for eating because they're so toxic. Anything that stays in the ocean for a long time gathers more and more toxicity, especially mercury. So eating whales, and the Japanese also eat a lot of dolphin, it's crazy. And one person who's trying to help make them understand that is a man named Hardy Jones, who has an organization called Blue Voice. And his approach for whale conservation and dolphin conservation is to try to help teach the populations that still eat these animals that they're killing themselves with mercury poisoning. But, yeah, that was a victory for the whales that day, and we can't stop keeping the pressure on countries that are still killing whales for whatever reason. It has to stop before we drive them into an extinction. The blue whales, for example, the biggest mammal on the planet, they're nearing extinction. The right whales are in extinction. We really can't be that foolish that we're going to drive these incredible mammals into extinction in our lifetime. And I just can't bear to think that.
When my wife and I were on cruise, a small ship cruise to the Alaskan islands, we saw lots of whales. I don't know if they were blue, but lots of whales just frolicking in the sounds and in the waters. It was really fascinating for me.
Orca whales? Was that the orca?
I'm not sure what I saw. And it was a while ago. It was about 2 years ago, so I don't really recall. But I do have all the photos I took.
Wonderful. I'd love to see that.
Yeah,
the truth is that there are some places where we're still seeing, I mean, there are still plenty of whales on this planet, but the military, the Navy sonar programs openly declare that they expect to kill or maim or take out up to 13 million mammals in the ocean because of their sonar and other war tests. And how long before we do see extinction? So
we must stop that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking here as we come to a close. It says here the emissary has been optioned by Global Entertainment Holdings, motion picture and TV rights, a novel by internationally renowned writer and visionary Patricia Corey. Corey is a native of the San Francisco Bay Area, and she has been immersed in the New Thought movement since its inception. Patricia Corey has been recognized and celebrated as a gifted shaman by indigenous spirit teachers of the Tibetan, Mayan, and Peruvian traditions. I really appreciate you being my guest today on Global Radio Talk Show. And what's your website?
The website for The Emissary is theemissary.net, where people can get updated information and more information about what the book is about and how to get their hands on it. And Save Earth's Oceans, which I hope your audience will have been tweaked to know more about, is saveearthsoceans.org. And they can also look for me on Google. As you said, I'm kind of all over the place on Google and have all kinds of, I've got a broad range, I think, of things that I'm talking about, caring about, and working on.
This is great. So it's Patricia Corey, spelled C-O-R-I. Thanks for being our guest. This is Ed Cohen signing off from Old Town, San Diego.
I think to myself, what a wonderful